Hi, everybody. My name is Carl Darden, and I'd like to welcome and thank all of you for joining us today here on Navy Sports Central. I am your host, and this is the official podcast of the Navy Sports Nation, where we take a deeper dive into Navy sports. In this episode, we'll be breaking down the Mids' game against the Houston Cougars this past week, and we'll also talk about Navy's dramatic win over Army in golf and some of the clutch performances that helped the Mids earn their first star over the Black Knights in 5 years. So stay with us. We've got a lot to cover. Okay, welcome back, everybody. And whether you are a returning listener or you're checking us out for the first time, thanks for making us part of your day. There has been a lot going on lately, even with the bye week that the football team had a couple weekends ago, so let's go ahead and get you caught up on things. Today, we're going to cover men's and women's golf, the rifle team, both sailing teams, and sprint football. And by the way, the Mids do compete in about a dozen fall sports, so while I may not get to all of them in one episode, I'll definitely cover each one at least once during the fall season. So today we're going to look at these five. And while I'm thinking about it, the men's golf team I'm going to cover in the second half of our deep dive segment. So this is what's going on with the women's team. During the fall, they usually play a series of invitational tournaments, and then they come back in the spring to compete in league play. So just this past weekend, they were one of 11 teams that took part in the Bucknell Invitational, and this is a 54-hole tournament played in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. And the Mids played extremely well. By my count, there were about 60 golfers competing, and the Mids entered five. All of them finished in the top 25, and four were among the top 10. Their best finisher was Mara Hurdle, and she wound up tied for first, actually. She shot 73, 72, and 73 over the 2 days, which actually tied the second best ever score in that tournament. Hurdle is a sophomore from Pinehurst, North Carolina, and she was followed by her teammates Tori Smith, who finished third. Eve Warden came in tied for fifth. Stephanie Lee finished ninth, and Jenna Hahn finished 23rd. All right, so this is the second time the Mids have actually won this tournament in the last 3 years, and next up for them is the Navy Invitational Tournament on their home course this weekend, followed by three more in October. Then the team will break for the winter before getting ready to defend their Patriot League title in the spring. Okay, next we have the rifle team, which, by the way, is one of three co-ed teams at the Academy. The other two are intercollegiate and offshore sailing, which we'll get to in a minute. The rifle team competes all the way through the spring, which is when the NCAA championships are held. They got their season going last weekend when they hosted VMI and TCU. They beat the Commodores with a score of 4,673 points, and VMI came up with 4,504. But TCU scored 4,710 points to just edge the Mids out. So they did split the two matches, and they go against number 11 ranked Akron and number 12 ranked Ohio State this weekend. And just so you know, I did feature the rifle team in the Navy Sports Nation blog last year. So if you want the details on how the competitions are set up, I'll go ahead and leave a link in the show notes so you can check it out. In any case, team captain Mike Zante led the way for the Mids, and he scored 587 points out of a possible 600 in the small bore competition. And then he registered 597 points in the air rifle. Both scores were personal bests, and his combined score of 1,184 points ranks as the second highest in the program's history. Zante's classmate, Mark Omdahl, also turned in a strong performance with a combined score of 1,167. That broke down into 572 points in small bore and 595 points in air rifle. And finally, freshman Marley Duncan also finished in the top 10, posting 573 points in small bore, 586 in the air rifle for a total of 1,159. And by the way, that was her very first collegiate competition. So looks like we can expect some really good things from her. So a pretty decent outing overall for the rifle team, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they do the rest of the season. All right, let's go ahead and see what's happening with both Navy sailing teams. First, we have the intercollegiate squad. They race the boats that I know as the knockabouts. At least that's what I called them when I was at the Academy. But I'm pretty sure there's a more official name, and I'll see if I can find that out later. There were seven teams competing for the Intrepid Trophy this past weekend, and the top finisher would qualify for the Match Race Nationals, which will be held in November down in Florida. So for these races, each boat was manned by four sailors, and Navy's crew of J.C. Hermes, Gray Benson, Kimmy Leonard, and Jack Carminati got through the round-robin competition in pretty good shape by winning all six races. They followed that up by beating Kings Point in the semifinals, taking two races there. I'm guessing those were best two out of three. And in the finals, they again won two races to beat Georgetown and take home the Intrepid Trophy, which earned them that ticket to the Match Race Nationals next month. This weekend, the team will be in New London, Connecticut to see if they can add the Danmark Trophy to their collection. So best of luck to our defending national champions in intercollegiate sailing. Now let's jump over to the offshore sailing team. They just competed in a couple events recently, with the biggest one being the U.S. Offshore Sailing Championships. On the first day, the Navy crew led by Don Poirier won the first race and then finished a close second in the next one, so they were in pretty decent shape after day one. Things wrapped up on Sunday with two more races, and the Mids won the first one, which put them back into first place by a very slight margin, but they just couldn't hang on in that last race and ended up finishing third overall. But still, it was a pretty good result, and the Mids will be back on the Chesapeake this weekend for the first of the Annapolis Yacht Club Fall Series races. Okay, that brings us to Navy Sprint Football. These guys have gotten off to a fantastic start. They are 2-0 on the year, and the one thing I will say is they haven't had any problem whatsoever putting points on the board. Through two games, they've outscored their opponents 107-7. Now, to refresh your memory, last year the team really got shortchanged on their season. They only played one game, and that was against Army. Unfortunately, they lost it 7-3, and I'll talk a little bit more about that game in a minute. But their last full season, of course, was in 2019, and during that year, the offense averaged about 180 yards rushing and 100 yards passing per game. And so far this year, they're throwing the ball a lot more. Coach Midas just took over the team. He is a Marine Corps major and actually a former Sprint football player as well. And it looks like he does favor a more wide open style. So that gives the Black Knights something to think about on Saturday. They've got a pretty decent team too, though. And they also like to throw the ball a lot. Navy's quarterback is Brandon Atwood, and he is a sophomore from Gentry, Arkansas. In the first game of the season, he threw for 313 yards. And by the way, that was his very, very first start because he was not the starter last year. And then in the second game that they won 52-0 over Chestnut Hill, the offense relied more on the running game to crank out 347 yards. And on defense, linebacker Paul Kuehler led the team with seven tackles, including a sack. These Army-Navy Sprint football games are really unpredictable. I could have sworn both teams were going to score more points last season, but Army only won it by that 7-3 score. These two offenses look a lot stronger, though, so even if each team does their homework in getting ready for the game, I've got to believe that they're going to put up more than the combined 10 points that they did last year. The game starts at 1 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. I am going to look to see if Army's going to stream it since they are the home team. Otherwise, I'm just going to go ahead and track the stats on the Navy Sports website. Okay, that gets you caught up on all the fall sports we covered today. Let's go ahead and step away for a short break, and our deep dive segment is next. All right, it is time for our deep dive segment, and in part one, we're going to get a little bit more into the Mids game against Houston last week. It was another tough loss against a really good team. The off week did seem to help the offense in the first half. And I noted that it only took them about three plays to generate more total yards than they had against Air Force the entire game. So that was a plus. But the Cougars did make some great adjustments in the second half to put the clamps on the Mids running game. And then they converted a critical fumble into a touchdown to grab the momentum and take control. So it was a pretty frustrating day for both the players and the coaches. And I think what makes this one especially tough is that the Mids definitely had their chances. They put together a drive in the fourth quarter that got them deep into Houston territory, but they could only manage a field goal. And after turning the ball over on downs on their final possession, the Cougars ran out the clock and came away with the 28-20 win. Now, I will say that Houston is an excellent team with one of the better defenses in the country, and the Mids definitely had them on their heels in the first half. But in the second half, Navy had four possessions, and the Cougars' defense really got the job done. They registered two three-and-out possessions, forced a fumble that resulted in a touchdown, held the Mids to a field goal when they had a first and 10 on the Houston 20, and stopped them on downs on their last possession to close out the game. Now, so far this year, this team has been derailed by mistakes that happened at the worst possible time, and the best example I can give you is that fumble that occurred right after Houston took that 21-17 lead. The defense came right back on the field, and it looked like they had stopped them and to force a field goal attempt to keep it a one-possession game, but the Mids got flagged for defensive holding, which extended the Houston drive, and they punched it in for a touchdown three plays later. Now, as I'd mentioned before, the Mids did get the ball back with about 3 minutes to go in the game, a little over 3 minutes, actually, and they were down 28-20. Masai Maynard came into the game because, as we've mentioned before, he's a much better passer, and they really needed to get down the field in a hurry. Anyway, on second down from their own 28, Maynard rolled right and delivered a perfect strike to Chance Warren, but it went off his hands and fell incomplete. On the very next play, Maynard was sacked, and on his final pass on 4th and 18, he did complete it to Mark Walker, but it was 3 yards short of the first down, and that was pretty much all she wrote. What really hurt on that last series was seeing Warren not being able to come up with that catch on second down. He was behind his defender, and he was angling towards the right sideline. So I'm thinking if he catches the ball and gets his hips turned upfield, he could have at least gotten into Houston territory to keep that drive alive. Now, the fact is, you know, they still needed to punch it in and get the two-point conversion just to tie. So the odds are still pretty long considering how well Houston was playing, but, you know, you never know. So I watched that play a couple of times, and I couldn't help but wonder if not accounting for the difference in the two quarterbacks' throwing styles was the reason Warren didn't come up with the ball. And here's what I mean. Xavier Arline is still developing as a passer, okay? We all know that. He was 3-for-6 for 83 yards against the Houston defense. But you can tell his instinct is still to pull the ball down and run the first chance he gets. Now, I will give him credit. He completed a 37-yarder to Michael Cooper in the first half, and that led to Navy's second touchdown. But to me, it still looked like he couldn't wait to get the ball out of his hands. His feet weren't quite set, and he didn't step into the throw. The ball was slightly underthrown, and Cooper had to kind of wait on it a little bit. To tell you the truth, I actually give Arline credit for getting as much on it as he did, because at first I thought it was going to be intercepted. I guess my point is that Arline's throwing mechanics haven't reached a level of consistency yet where he can deliver a nice, crisp pass right on target where the receiver can get it every time. Now, from what I can tell, Arline doesn't have the same quick release as Lavitar or Maynard, and that can make a difference with the receivers, especially on the shorter pass patterns. So what I'm thinking here is that Warren and the other receivers have a pretty good feel for how Arline throws the ball. The one thing I don't know is how often they take throws from Maynard in practice. And that brings me back to that 2nd and 7 play. Even if Warren has caught more than a few passes from Maynard in practice, I can't help but wonder if he made that mental adjustment when the junior quarterback entered the game. Because when Maynard made that pass, Warren's hands weren't quite in position to make the catch. They were still actually coming up to meet the ball instead of already being there. In other words, the ball got to Warren faster than he expected because he might have been more accustomed to Arline's delivery. Now, to be fair, it's not uncommon for something like that to happen when a new quarterback enters the game, especially if there's a clear difference in passing skills. But receivers do need to be ready in those situations and kind of recalibrate their brains to tell their hands to get in a position faster. Now, you know, I'm just thinking out loud here. I've seen Warren make some clutch catches in his Navy career, you know, like that option pass he grabbed against Kansas State in the Liberty Bowl, which led to the game-winning field goal. So I know the kid doesn't have stone hands. It's just after watching the replay, it's pretty clear that his hands weren't quite there. And I'm wondering if it might have been because he didn't make that mental adjustment to be ready for how quickly Maynard delivers the ball. Now, despite all of that, there were still a few positives. The first half was the best 30 minutes of football the Mids have played all season as a team. Now they just need to sustain it for two halves. They got good run production from the fullbacks. Isaac Ruos and James Harris II accounted for 102 yards on 25 carries, I think. Most of those did come in the first half, but the majority of the positive rushing yards the Mids got in the second half came from those two guys. Another good thing to see was that Arline did a decent job of getting the ball to Michael Cooper. Not all the passes were pretty, but in the first half, they were enough to keep the Cougars thinking, which made the offense a little bit more effective. This is something they need to build on. In the past, the Navy offense could get away with not passing the ball and still win games because the rushing attack was lights out. But that's not the case this season, and we've seen that. The offense did get off to a good start against the Cougars, but there's still some work to do, I think. And unless we have some form of a basic passing game to let that option breathe a little bit, I think the offense as a whole is going to struggle. Now, the question is, does that happen with Arline under center or one of the other two guys? Lavatai got hurt in that very first game against Marshall, and word was just this week that he's 100% recovered, so he's probably going to be battling Arline for that starting job again. We'll see who starts on Saturday. Truthfully, I don't know if that's going to be enough time for Lavatai to get all the rust knocked off, but we'll see. The bad news is that it doesn't get any better for the Mids in October. Their schedule this season was definitely front-loaded with the stronger teams first. Central Florida, SMU, Memphis, and Cincinnati are their next four opponents. All of them average over 39 points a game. The only way our guys are going to have a chance is to keep those offenses off the field as much as possible. And that means establishing the run and passing effectively enough to keep the defenses from crowding the box. That'll keep the sticks moving, but the most important thing is to score touchdowns once they get into the red zone. UCF is going to be really, really tough on Saturday, and Cincinnati is a top 10 team, so, you know, I'm not really sure about our chances there, even though it is a home game. But if the Mids continue to improve offensively, I think they got a decent shot against SMU and Memphis if they can eliminate their mistakes. The defense is certainly playing well enough, so we'll see how things go. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll recap what was probably one of Navy's most thrilling wins over Army in recent memory on the golf course. So stay with us. You're not going to want to miss this. Okay, welcome back to Navy Sports Central, everyone. Carl Darden here with you, and it's time to talk some golf. Now, I have to admit that I don't play as much golf as I used to, but I'm still a huge fan, and I especially like watching match play, which is the format that's used when Army and Navy go head-to-head. At least that's the way it's been for about the last 19 or so years. So for those of you who may not be familiar with match play, this is how things work for the Army-Navy competition, okay? Everything takes place over 2 days, and the first day features four matches. So the Mids and the Black Knights sent out four teams of two players each to play against each other, and they play what they call four ball. In this particular case, each golfer plays their own ball, and the lowest score wins the hole. So if there's a tie, there's no change in the score. The team that wins the most number of holes wins the match, earning 1 point for their side. And again, if the match is tied, each team receives half a point. On the second day, there are seven singles matches. So there's a total of 11 points up for grabs over the weekend. And it's worth noting here that a match can end early depending on how things go. So here's an example. Let's say you have either a team or a player, it doesn't matter. And they are going to the 16th hole, and say the Mids have a two-hole advantage at that point. So they're up two holes, and there's three left to play. So if they win that 16th hole, they'd be up three holes with two left to play, so there's really no need to play those remaining couple of holes there. And it would go down in the books as a win for the Mids, and the score would be recorded as 3-2, meaning they were three holes up with two left. So that's basically how that works. Now, obviously, with 11 points being out there, the first team that earns 6 points wins the match. But because there is that possibility of matches being tied, you can have a situation where each team finishes with 5.5 points. If that happens, they go ahead and go to sudden death. And the way that works is you'd have each coach pick a player, and they would just basically start doing a sudden death playoff. And it would just, they would go as many holes as it would take for somebody to win a hole. So that gets you up to speed on how the matches are scored. Now let's get into how things went over the weekend. And just for the record, the Mids held a 44-38 lead in the overall competition. There has been one tie, and I think that must have been before they came up with this current playoff format. Anyway, the Mids got through the first day of four ball in decent shape. They won a match, tied another, and they entered Sunday's singles matches slightly behind 2.5 points to 1.5. But they were actually in a pretty good spot because the singles play was definitely one of the team's strengths. In the first match on Sunday, Navy junior Keegan Shreves got the team going by earning a critical half point in his first match against Army captain Tom Katsenis. Then Andrew Wilkinson tied things up when he torched the Black Knight Samuel Kim 5-4. So that match got done pretty quickly. That gave the Mids some momentum because right after that, seniors Nick Clock and Dave McCauley won their matches, putting the Mids up 5-3. So things are looking pretty good at this point. In fact, Clark didn't waste any time putting his guy away. That match was over by the 13th hole as he cruised to a 6-5 win. McCauley and his opponent, Gary Bullard, were tied going to the 18th hole, but McCauley was able to pull that out. He won the 18th and he took the match one up. Next, you had Noah Nuez, who is a freshman from Levine, Arizona, which actually is just a couple towns over from where I live. But he came up really big in the four ball the previous day, and then on Sunday scratched out a tough half a point against Army Junior Dragon Thiem. So at this point, the Mids are sitting on a 5.5 to 4.5 lead, and all they need to do is tie the last match. And that was between Navy's Chad Deegan and Army's Marshall Daniels. If they get that tie, the star is theirs. And the Mids look to be in control too, but the one thing about match play is it's amazing how quickly things can change. Deegan was up by two holes with four to play, so all he needed to do was basically tie two of the remaining holes and the Mids would get that win. But Daniels just didn't let that happen, and to his credit, he won three of the last four holes, so he won the match. That put both teams at 5.5 points apiece, which forced the playoff. So here's where golf can be such a mental roller coaster, especially when you're talking about team play. Each coach identified which player they wanted to send out for the playoffs. So Navy coach Pat Owen went with Nick Clark, and Army went with their team captain, Tom Katsenis. So here's what I'm talking about when I mentioned that mental roller coaster. Okay, let's put yourself in Nick Clark's shoes for just a second. All right. He basically went out and had a tremendous day on Saturday, you know, getting the point for his guys in the four ball competition with him and his partner. And then he comes back and just absolutely smokes his opponent in singles. So, you know, you figure, okay, I've done my part. I'm here to cheer on the rest of my teammates and let's see where this takes us. And then all of a sudden you see the Mids, you know, give up that 1 point lead on the very last match of the day when all they needed was a halve. And then the coach comes at him and says, "Hey man, you're out there. You're our guy for the playoff." Okay. So now Nick is a senior, so he's been there before, I'm sure, and he's experienced all different kinds of pressure. So he was definitely up for the challenge, and you'll see what I'm talking about in a minute. But still, you got to wonder how you have to kind of recage your brain when you figure, okay, I've done my job, but then all of a sudden, boom, you know, there's one more thing you got to get done to bring that star home. So let's go ahead and see how the playoff went. Both players got off the tee fine. Their shots found the middle of the fairway, so they were in pretty good shape. Katsenis played his second shot first, and he just sent it flying right over the green. Now, a couple of things could have happened here. Number one, he could have misclubbed, but my guess is he picked the right club and just didn't account for his adrenaline. That can happen sometimes. And some golfers who are that aware of things can actually take that into account and club down because they know they're just going to, you know, crank the heck out of the ball. And then by taking a shorter club, the adrenaline is what carries it, you know, the distance that it needs to go. But in this particular case, Katsenis went long. So now Clark is in the driver's seat. And he played an okay shot. I don't think it was the one he wanted. And the ball did land on the green right there in the fringe, but it was way far right. And it did set up a pretty challenging two putt to get home. At this point, Katsenis' only hope was to put his third shot really close and try to shift the pressure back to Clark, but that's not what happened. His attempt had a little bit too much steam on it, and it went off the green. So Clark had a little bit of breathing room here, but he didn't want to waste any time. So the goal was to get that third shot as close as possible, and he did a nice job. Clark hit a really good lag putt and got it to within 4 feet. And then when Katsenis failed to hole out from off the green, the Navy senior from Moraga, California, just lined up what had to be the biggest putt of his golfing career to date and just calmly rolled it in. So that gave the Mids their first star over Army in 5 years. And it was about as thrilling a finish as you're going to see. So congratulations to the Navy golf team on an absolutely terrific win. Okay, tell you what, we're going to step away for a short break. And when we come back, we'll be jumping into our question of the day and mid-watch segments. So don't go anywhere. Okay, we are back. We are back, and it is time for our question of the day. As always, let's go ahead and take a look back at the question from our previous episode. And you may recall that I asked whether or not the Mids would rush for more than 300 yards against Houston. Well, I'm sorry to say that the pessimists won that round, but it wasn't a slam dunk, actually. The Mids were over halfway to their goal by halftime, or at least halfway to the goal I'd set out there for them by halftime. But Houston made the necessary adjustments to keep them just under 200 yards. And by the way, that was only because Maynard got sacked on third down in that last series that the Mids had. Altogether, there are 35 of you who correctly figured the offense would come up short, and there were eight optimists out there, including me, who figured they could get the job done, but maybe they'll have better success running the ball against Central Florida this weekend. All right, so for this week's question, let's get away from football for a minute. This is going to be for all you weekend golfers out there, and here's the question. What is the farthest distance you've ever holed out from during a round? Okay, and here are your choices. Between 5 and 10 yards, between 11 and 50 yards. Choice 3 is between 51 and 150 yards. And finally, our last option is greater than 150 yards. So go ahead and make your selections on our group Facebook page. And I'm going to want to get some details on this one. So leave a comment telling us what happened. And what I'll do is I'll read the best one. Not on the very next podcast, which comes out less than a week, where we'll be previewing the Army-Navy soccer game, but on the one that comes out after that. So that way you guys will have plenty of time to answer. All right, we're on a little bit of a roll here, so let's just press on with our midwatch segment. Remember, we are following Ashwin Briggs from the men's cross-country team and Avery Stoll from the volleyball team. And actually, there isn't anything to report where Briggs is concerned because the cross-country team hasn't competed since the last podcast episode. But they are in action today up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania at the Paul Short Invitational. And that is their last meet before they go up against Army on October the 15th. So pretty good opportunity to sharpen everything up and get ready for that showdown against the Black Knights up in New York. The volleyball team is on the road this weekend for a couple of matches against Bucknell, which is tonight, and also Lehigh, which is tomorrow night, Saturday. The loss to Army was tough, but they'll get another crack at them in about a month on November 5th on the road. In the meantime, Avery Stoll continues to be among the team leaders in kills and service aces. Right now, she sits second in kills with 98, and that's eight behind Jamie Llewellyn, who leads with 106. Stoll also has 10 service aces, which puts her in third place. Defensively, the Navy senior is third among hitters in digs, and she's tied for second in blocks with 26. Now, against Army, Stoll had 10 kills, 3 blocks, which tied her for the team lead, and she accounted for 12.5 of Navy's points during the match. I'm sure by now that setback is in the team's rearview mirror as they focus on their next couple of league games, so we'll see how things go this weekend, and hopefully they'll get a chance to get some revenge against Army when they play them again. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Navy Sports Central. Thank you all so much for joining us. Now, if you like what you've heard, remember to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to spread the word to all the other Navy fans out there. And remember, you can respond to our question of the day by going to the Navy Sports Nation group Facebook page. I'll go ahead and pin it to the top so you won't miss it. And just a quick reminder, the views expressed on Navy Sports Central are my own and do not reflect those of the U.S. Naval Academy or Navy Athletics. By the way, the music used on Navy Sports Central podcast comes to you from Audio Jungle. This is a great resource for purchasing the rights to use music from thousands of artists around the world, and those we feature in our podcast will be credited in our show notes. Talk to you soon, everybody. Until next time, this is Carl Darden. Go Navy, beat Army.